Welcome to Day Zero Update for October 12th, 2025. I'm your host, Chris Sologi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm General Victorio.
And yeah, we've got a decent week of news, I would say.
Yep.
Not really a ton of things here, but we do have a bunch of developer news, as a bunch of things have happened, mostly bad, but a few good things here.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, we got some things we can talk about. A bunch of games have been coming out. A bunch of reviews and such have been going up. So we got things to talk about. And I'll kick it off here with what I've been doing. I've been playing a good bit of Ghost of Yote this weekend as I managed to start it. Mm-hmm. And it's really quite good. The big change they've done since the first game is that it is not as straightforward of an open world game as before. They kind of have you go through an opening sequence where they're kind of tutorializing things for you. You take out one of the Yote Six, and from there on, you kind of go through a little sequence where you end up in the open world area, and then they kind of set you up to essentially do sort of like what you do in Breath of the Wild, where you can use your little spyglass to look at things in the horizon and kind of add that stuff to your map. You go back to your home, because the big thing with your character here, Atsu, is that she dealt with the Yote Six kind of ransacking her home, killing all of her family, and leaving her for dead. Foolishly, they just stick a sword in her shoulder.
Yeah.
And she somehow survives.
Yep.
And so much has kind of grown up living this life of revenge, essentially, and, you know, begins with her finding one of the six, the snake.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of kill him to start the game. That kind of puts you on the radar of the Lord Sat. I forget it was Lord Satoy or something. The Lord in the region who is understandably trying to take over everything and take you out because you are the biggest threat to them. Though there's also another group that is kind of the opposition force. I forget what they're called. I think it's the Matsumai, who are sort of the other big force nearby, trying to protect the area of Ezo. You kind of get to explore as you want. So they kind of initially set you towards like an inn where you can start, you know, gathering information about the remaining five members of the Yote Six who are scattered around the map. I don't think you're going to run into any of them all that quickly. So I kind of end up just kind of running around looking at things. The nice thing it does when you point your spyglass over points of interest, it'll add that to the map. It'll also sort of tell you the name of what it is. Usually, unless it's like, oh, this is like a familiar area to Atsu. You kind of do a lot of interesting backstory stuff where they just have you hold down the touchpad and you kind of instantly transport to Atsu's younger self to deal with whatever that little story bit is. Oftentimes, it's an introduction of mechanics in the game. There's like a forging mini game that you get to do to improve your sword. I don't think like Ghost of Tsushima, where you would have a number of different like you have your triangle of weapons essentially that were sort of a rock, paper, scissors kind of thing here, whereas you kind of have one sword. You never really replace it with anything, you just upgrade it. Back at your home base. that's where they sort of introduce other things. You learn more about the, you know, your family, your brother, and the mom and dad, and all that. And it's got some nice vibes to it. And kind of in contrast with the previous game, your character is only concerned about revenge. There's no family members that are like, oh, think about the honor kind of thing. That was kind of the weird bit of dissonance that Tsushima had, where, you know, it was a game built around sneaking around, killing dudes, and, you know, fighting dudes as you want.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole like idea with Ghost of Tsushima was the game was kind of deconstructing the whole image of the samurai class that was often put forward, and kind of showing that, for one thing, being a samurai kind of sucked because you were basically stuck with that title forever and couldn't really do anything else. And also because their whole prosperity basically more or less was built on them extorting the peasants. So him sort of showing like that whole thing about honor and everything is largely bullshit. And that was kind of the whole thing about that game. It's showing that, you know, because the whole thing is he essentially, and I'm not sure if you've gotten to that part yet, but eventually it's sort of revealed that Jin is generally considered in the universe of Ghost of Yote to be the quote unquote the first shinobi, more or less. So
yeah,
that's more like that.
Yeah, you don't really get any sort of push and pull over what Atsu's goal should be here.
Mm-hmm.
Because she is very much a mercenary.
Yeah.
A Ronin, essentially, who sets out to just kill anybody that is in her way. And you do run into, like, little camps and such of people that are hanging out. And I had one guy who's like, oh, I want to, you know, be in Lord Saito's army. You know, I want to be one of his samurai. And he's like, you have options to respond to him. And be like, you know he's an idiot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, don't you dare talk about Lord Saito like that. And you can kind of potentially start a fight, but you could also just be like, you're not worth my time. Go away. And he'll just run away kind of thing. So you get a lot of that running into people that will kind of be in your orbit, merchants, different kinds of merchants, and people that can improve your armor and weapons and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of similar to what was in the previous game, though they have the camps system where you can kind of have some of those people show up so you don't necessarily have to run across the map to go find where the specific people are to do your upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still in the opening area where the last thing I did was I went up on Mount Yote.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a family thing because you find out that your parents left a charm for each of you and your brother up there for you to find when you were of age, kind of thing. And obviously they were all killed, so you just go up in the modern day and find it later. The nice thing is you kind of can go all around that mountain. Or at least the top part of the mountain. You're going to have specific paths up it. Once you get to the top, it is kind of, you know, kind of volcano-like, where there's a big crown around the top, and you can kind of go down. And have some materials and such to collect if you want to do that. But they do have, like, a big ring. You can just kind of go around from one side to the other. And I think that's pretty nice. It's a very beautiful setting. But yeah, I've been doing a lot of the bounties, some of which, you know, I just happened upon before I found. I didn't go to the inn for maybe 2 hours into the game. So I was just wandering around. I found this guy named, I think it was like Black Powder Ipe, who, if you can guess, throws bombs around a lot. Him and his people do that. So kind of running up and finding, you know, a couple people here and there that are fending off innocents that are trying to do stuff. And yeah, kind of worked my way up and killed the guy without really any upgrades or anything to my character. And that was pretty fun. And, I eventually made my way to the inn and was able to turn that in and be like, all right, where's my money for this? And got paid for it. And obviously, being the sort of character you are, your bounty is often up on the boards for this stuff. So you can kind of take it down. They do show some people that are kind of also Ronin that are coming after you every once in a while for that stuff. But you can also just run into little story moments and missions and such without having to necessarily find out from other people. But you do talk to people that'll be like, oh, I know of the spring that's over here. It'll put a little thing on your map for you. But you can also buy map stuff that essentially shows you nearby points of interest. They're like, okay, this thing is here, and you'll see like a little curvatures of things that are drawn on the map to juxtapose it against, and you have to like plant it on the map to be like, okay, this thing's here. And it's like, okay, yeah, I see. Here's parts of the river kind of stuff that give you a place to nowhere to orient it. So yeah, it has a lot of smart design stuff here. The combat's feeling pretty good so far. Yeah, I don't really know that there's too much else I can say about it yet, but yeah, enjoying it a lot. Kind of freedom to go in any of the after any of the Yote 6 as you want, kind of is a neat way to do things. And it seems like the general scope is a lot more user-friendly compared to Assassin's Creed Shadows, where you kind of have a bunch of points of investigations that you can do. So much so that I've seen people that are like, I beat the game, but there's still a bunch more of these things. They're just kind of seemingly endless, which is kind of what Assassin's Creed games have been doing for about the past 10 years at this point, since Assassin's Creed Origins, where they're just kind of seemingly endless games. This seems like it's probably not as endless as that. That you can kind of play through it and probably not have to spend a ton of time to enjoy it and get through it and feel satisfaction at a conclusion, whereas Assassin's Creed kind of can keep going as long as you want it to. Which is good and not so good when you just want to finish games. So there's that. The other game I've been playing some more of is Dreams of Another. I brought up my review and got it. It's live now. I gave it a 3 out of 5. I enjoyed it, but there's a lot of caveats to that, and a lot of reasons I would not recommend it to certain people. I've seen people describe it as like an action game, and I'm like, it's not an action game at all. More of a narrative adventure game that, trades on the stylings of an action game, because you're shooting up these environments to essentially create them or bring them into focus for you to, talk to people and do what you're supposed to do to progress the story, but it also breaks that up a lot. So you often do like one or two little scenes and end up back at the main menu every like 5 minutes or so, in a way that got a bit frustrating at times, especially trying to get an idea of how long the game would be, which was just it's a very weird framing of this that I don't think many other games have done. I do get why they do this because they take you back to the main screen of. You see this man in pajamas asleep, and that evolves over the course of the game. Though I feel like there's probably a better way of doing that. That would be a bit more effective without necessarily feeling like you're being kicked out of the game every time you're trying to play it. But yeah, I finished up the game and wrote the review and had two trophies left. One. Both of them are essentially the same trophy, just different goals that you needed to get for that, which are just getting these, I think what they call sentiments, essentially just walking up to things in the environment or creatures or people or whatever, and talk to them. Kind of one of the main things you do throughout the game. You often run across doors that will tell you things and whatnot. And it's the trophy I'm working on is to get to 100 of those. I'm at like 83, I think. And it's kind of, it's a slow pace trophy because it's, you know, a slow paced game where you may have a couple of these. And I think it's unique in the like sentiments you're collecting, because they do give you a section of the menu that lets you re-experience all of them if you want, listen to what they have to say. Though it just shows you the number that it is, like, you know, this is the 1 and 2 and 3, you know, and so on to, like, it goes up to like the 180s, maybe up 200. So I must be missing ones from later in the game. So I'm replaying it in the new game plus mode, which essentially just carries over my progress on that stuff and the amount of ammo I have for my grenade and my rocket launcher. So I'm just kind of continuing to play through it and get any progress I can on that stuff. So not really much else to add on that. Definitely check out my review for that. So there's that. Been playing some Hades 2, which I'm liking. But it has the same kind of issues of Hades 1, where the progress can be slow if you're not having success with the combat. Because the only progress then you can make is just collecting the materials, whatever, to do upgrades and whatnot. So I'm still like in like the 5th or 6th runs, something like that. It's still pretty early. I still don't have like the ability to upgrade stats really at this point. Still have the one weapon unlocked and one tool, so I can't even collect all the materials I'm seeing in runs, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's kind of slow going early on. This may be one I don't play on a Steam Deck because it just does not control super well on it with the combat and all that. And I feel like there's a weird thing when I go to start it, and it takes like 4 or 5 minutes for the game to launch. That's a weird thing that happens with the Steam Deck in a way that I'm just like really annoyed when I try to start it up, because I'm, you know, trying to get in quick, like 15 to 30 minutes of game time before I go to bed, and the stuff like that is getting in the way of it, pushes me to other things. But yeah, the bits I have been getting in still feels good. And all that's a lot of good story and, you know, progression stuff to it. Has a lot of similar things to the first game. Those probably tuned a bit better here. But yeah, liking what I'm seeing so far. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been doing in Hades. The other thing I've been playing is kind of the thing I've been going to, and you know, when Hades 2 is being annoying, is Deep Rock Galactic Survivor, which I've been putting a good bit of time into this week, where I am unlocking a lot of the extra modes now where I'm at. I've put maybe like 6 or 7 hours into it this week and enjoying it a lot, as I've unlocked the, I forget what the other mode is, Escort Duty is what it's called, where you essentially have a digger. It seems like an escort mode where you need to protect the digger, but the digger does not need any protection. You're essentially having an extra thing to go mine, which is oil. I forget what they call it, oil shales, which you collect and then drop it off in the thing. It'll keep it fueled. And if you're within the radius that it's around it, it'll keep moving forward. And it moves in a linear path, so nothing really too complicated about that. But like the regular missions, they will have a few goals for you to do, and those have not been too tough. But the interesting thing is, once you get to the end of the stage, it kind of, you move the digger into a, you know, final place to get it ready to go down to the next area, and you essentially set off trigger some bombs that will explode and drop it to the next level, which is a pretty nice detail there, before the drop pod shows up and you can go down to continue the mission. And yeah, mm-hmm. that's a nice one. Doesn't feel like it takes as long as the main missions, but it's still pretty nice. And the other one I've been doing is the Masteries, which essentially are separate missions for when you max out a weapon in a run, which gets to level 18. And that opens up the mastery level for that weapon, which you are essentially doing kind of a regular mission, but the only thing you need to do is reach the end of it. And I think it's like 3 rounds instead of 5, like the regular ones, but you only have this one weapon, which is where the challenge comes into it. Because some of these weapons are good, kind of all-purpose weapons, and others are kind of more supplementary weapons, and those masteries are kind of very challenging to do. So that's kind of a nice little change of the formula there for that, and is a nice mode. So I still got a few more to unlock, and those require me to get into the higher hazard difficulty modes. So that'll take a bit of time, but making my way through more of these. I usually try to do one or two missions whenever I jump in. And yeah, that's one that runs really well on Steam Deck, though because of the kind of game it is, it also drains the battery really fast. We're going to maybe do 2 or 3 missions and battery would be down to about the 30% range. It's like, all right, done with that for the moment. So I've been playing more of it on PC just because I don't have to worry about the battery situation. But yeah, been liking that a lot, and that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
As for me, I can finally talk about the game that I had been, my secret game that I had been playing, because the embargo ended Friday. Well, no, it was Thursday, but you get the idea. It's Yuka Replayly, which was a top-to-bottom remaster of the, I think it was 2017, was it 2017 indie platformer Yooka-Laylee, which was basically a spiritual successor to Banjo-Kazooie that was made by a bunch of Rare alumni. And that, when it originally came out, was very, very divisive because it had a bunch of technical issues, and there were parts of it that made it seem like it might have been unfinished, and it was just kind of nonsensical. And because it hewed so close to the Banjo-Kazooie model, it almost came off like a, not to say like a ripoff, but like incredibly derivative. And essentially what they did is they basically went back and more or less rebuilt the game from the bottom up. They greatly improved the graphics. They added a bunch more cutscenes, so the story sound makes a bit more sense. They've doubled the number of collectibles. They added a bunch of new enemies and enemy varieties. There's a bunch of new mini games involved. And that's pretty, like, that's base. And they, oh, and they went back and like redid all the music, so it's all re-recorded. I did the review for this. It should be on Smashpad in the next couple of days. But it is still a very good quality platformer. But the problem is, even though it's definitely a major improvement and still a pretty fun, compelling game to play, it's still got some issues that a good like update like this just can't fix. One of the big ones is the fact that all of the worlds in this game are like very generic in their theming and in the way they're built. And they're also, and yet at the same time, they're also incredibly convoluted and like don't really have any sense to how they're built. And when I say derivative, it's like it's literally all the stuff you expect from a platformer. There's a swamp level, there's an ice level, there's a space level, you know, there's a water level. You get the idea. There's a casino level, stuff like that. And, you know, it's still fun. It's just, and on top of all of that, not only are, like I said, the worlds very generic, but the way that they're designed just doesn't really make any sense. And that's why in this version, they actually include a map with like a fast travel feature that can like help you keep track of all of the tasks that you have. Because in the original, they didn't have that at all. And it was really hard to really keep track of where in the hell you were. And there were like parts of it where, and the swamp level is a really good example of this, because a lot of like the water in the swamp level was actually toxic and you couldn't swim through it. And yet there's these huge stretches of areas where it's nothing but that water until you can get to dry land again. And unless you knew that, you know, it was almost impossible to, you know, traverse that particular world without, you know, knowing that before the fact. You know, if a good game would have already told you, like, yeah, so like there's a bunch of swamp stuff in here. You know, you can kind of see the land out in front. There's a way to go get there and do that. The original didn't do that. So, but that even though you've got a map and everything, the essential problem with the level design is still there. Also, the villain still looks like Gru wearing a bee mask. That's it. And the other game, you know, I'm still playing Far Cry 6. I've gotten better with that. I've managed to finally team up with the Monteros family and get rid of Castillo's stupid nephew, Jose, and basically take over the western part of the island. So, yeah, making pretty good progress with that game. One of the things I will say that's just really weird about it, because the thing is about the Far Cry series is they always put like a lot of emphasis on like getting all of these vehicles to drive around these huge areas that you can use and then, you know, storing them away and everything. But the thing is, Far Cry 6, when you do like the fast travel, a lot of these places you can fast travel to, they'll include a feature where you can literally just airdrop on top of it instead of just immediately fast traveling to it. And like considering like how far away your next task might be, it's like 50% of the time it's much more efficient to just, you know, put on the flying squirrel suit and just float over to where it is you need to go instead of just getting in a car. You know, it's just weird, but it's still a lot of fun either way. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So Danner, what about you?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm playing a whole bunch of stuff that I can't talk about. So I'll just go over, you know, what I played for most of the week. I pretty much finished Digimon Storytime Stranger. The review is up on Smashpad now. And yeah, I gave it a 3.5. I was much higher prior to going into it just because it demoed so well. But the game so like fell into that bucket of just taking too long to really get going. That being said, like once it actually does get going, it fires in all cylinders. And then the other issue is the fact that it just feels like a game that should have been on like the PS3 or PS4 or something like that. You know, just being a JRPG that doesn't really get with times. And that's frustrating considering this game is all about time travel. Like part of its issues is the fact that there's just way too many menus, and games like, you know, Metaphor Fantasio or even the latest Trails games have solved these menu problems by, you know, turning them all into different tabs to make them feel a whole lot more organized. And Digimon Story doesn't really do that. They do have a shortcut system, but it only goes to like one particular thing, which isn't going to be even used all that much. So that was pretty disappointing. That being said, though, this is probably the best Digimon game. Granted, this is the only one that I've played, but a lot of people seem to agree with that notion. it is a full-on turn-based JRPG with like almost, you know, I'm not going to say all the Digimon are available, but a lot of people have made their dream teams here. And the story is pretty cool because it follows a whole lot of Greek mythology. Like, you know, the main group you're a part of is called Atomos. It's just basically another way of saying strength. And at the same time, the Digiworld that they're in, you know, for those of you that follow Digimon, part of the reason why it's easy to get into is because every arc takes place on a different server. So you don't have to actually know who certain Digimon are. And the fact that they actually speak English or, you know, whatever your native language is, definitely helps as far as like understanding each character. And the Digimon definitely do stand out. You know, I talked about it last week. A lot of Digimon do look like humans, and that kind of like kind of throws things off. And, you know, you understand why, you know, there's a lot of fan servicey reasons. But aside from that, like, as I mentioned, it's based on Greek mythology. I talked about the main digital world being based on the Iliad. And yeah, a lot of the stories concern different Digimon that kind of resemble Greek gods. I don't want to go too far into it because I do think like it's worth playing if you're a Digimon fan. So, it was pretty cool. It's fairly short, around like 30, 35 hours, which is actually a huge improvement because Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth was around 60. So they definitely trimmed a lot of fat, but at the same time, it still feels longer than it should be. It really insists on doing a whole bunch of the side quests there, and the side quests are pretty simple. But while they're simple, the game's fast travel isn't as simple. Like, you can't just, you know, go ahead and choose where to go based on the menu. You actually have to go around looking for a taxi in the real world or a certain Digimon that can either fly or be a train in order to get to certain areas. And that made things feel like fluff. And yeah, that's something I didn't really appreciate. But I played the game on Steam Deck. It sings on it. It's Steam Deck verified, really good on there. The other game I played was Little Nightmares 3. This was actually my first Little Nightmares game, sort of, because my first time I played this was at a demo during Comic-Con. And I didn't realize that it was just one of those puzzle side-scrolling platformers where you have to just get from point A to point B. And there really isn't a whole lot of difficulty or combat. It's really just about solving puzzles or understanding the environment in order to get through. And Little Nightmares is, you know, it's designed to be a horror game, but because it has these cutesy graphics, it's probably not going to be that way. But at the same time, like, the dark, glum, gothic look is really one that has really translated as of late. Like, the first two games were fantastic, and it was really the demo of the third one that actually made me want to pursue the last two. I've never beaten any of the previous two games, but pretty much played enough to understand what it's all about here. And the main thing about Little Nightmares 3 was that it's developed by Supermassive Games. You know, they changed developers, but at the same time, it ended up just keeping the same gameplay, and it doesn't feel like they changed anything at all, which is kind of a double-edged sword here. The main thing that Little Nightmares 3 introduces is online co-op. And what's unfortunate is that it's not local co-op. So if you're expecting a game along the lines of like Split Fiction or It Takes Two, you know, it's almost like that because you do have the Friends Pass in order to share the game with someone that doesn't have it. But you also don't have the split-screen co-op that you would have if you were on the couch. You actually have to play with someone alone. And the other hard part is when you start the game one way, for example, you start playing single player, you can't continue in multiplayer. If you start playing multiplayer, you can't continue in single player. And yeah, a lot of these decisions just don't really seem like great for the player, which is unfortunate because this is definitely something that I did enjoy, you know, with the person that I played it with. But it was also something that I wish I could have continued on my own in order to beat it quicker, because, you know, they couldn't play with me, you know, for as long as they wanted to. So when I had to play on my own, I started all over, which was really unfortunate there. But yeah, the review is also up on Smashpad. I also gave this a 3.5. Bandai Namco has been releasing a whole bunch of 3.5s out of these last few months. But hey, 3.5s are good. So if you're looking for B games, these are all it. I also jumped into Ghost of Yote. But I did not really spend a whole lot of time in it. I've probably maybe played an hour and a half and I've gotten to the point where, you know, we're just looking for the Yote 6, and that's pretty much what the game is about. But I was impressed by, you know, going to your home, going to the farm, going back to the past, that kind of thing. That gameplay nuance was not in the original game, so I definitely enjoyed that aspect. I'm still trying to get through combat, just because I'm playing another game that's heavily combat intensive, and yeah, they're not the same in that regard. So it's been rough going as of late, but once I get through a whole bunch of the other games that I'm playing, then I'll be able to go ahead and spend more time on this one. And then lastly, as for games that I can talk about, I also started East versus Trails in the Sky, the fighting game that came out on Friday. And yeah, I've talked about them in the past. This is really just a port of what was released on, I forget whether it was PSP or Vita a while back. And yeah, it's available on everything now. And the main thing about East versus Trails in the Sky is that it takes everything from East 7 going back and everything from Trails in the Sky SC going back. So if you're expecting people like Rain or Dana from East 8, they're not going to be there. So they're going to be a little bit older. And the game is really based on the East 7 engine. So if you've played East 7, it's very much along those lines. But it is interesting using characters from Trails, because, you know, Trails is not a... it's not an action-based battle system, although kind of is now with the remake. But, you know, you're going back to where it was before. And the main thing with the Trails characters is that it also has some of the crossbow characters as well. But this game actually predates that, so you can't really go that far into the lore there. But yeah, this game was basically just a way to reuse the assets and release something to come out. And if you remember Power Stone, this is the kind of game that it's trying to be, except it's a little bit more janky. I don't really see myself playing this for more than a couple weeks, but I do want to finish at least Adol and Estelle's story in the story battle mode. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right.
All right. So yeah, let's get to some news. And first up we have here, Nintendo Switch Online has three new Super Nintendo games for you to check out.
Mm-hmm.
These are some interesting choices here. First up, we'll go with Bubsy and Claw's Encounter of the Furred Kind.
Mm-hmm.
As I guess they decided that the Bubsy collection did not need to be the only way you could check out Bubsy on. Mm-hmm. So they made that available for people, which is interesting. Luckily, you'll have the ability to do, you know, save states and all that kind of stuff, so mm-hmm. you don't necessarily have to go at it and, you know, play it on its own terms, because mm-hmm. it's not an easy game to get into in this day and age,
mm-hmm.
30 years later. So there's that. There's Fatal Fury Special. From 1995. Who's the original eight characters from Fatal Fury 2
mm-hmm.
and three new, Billy Kane, Axel Hawk, and Lawrence Blood.
Yeah.
And the new boss, Wolfgang Krauser. Also includes three characters from the original game, Kung Fu Ru, Duck King, and Geese Howard.
Yep.
So yeah, that's you know what, they're solid game.
Mm-hmm.
If you want your fighting games for the Super Nintendo.
Oh, yeah.
And then the last one's probably the most interesting one. It's Mario and Wario, a game that never came out over here.
Yep.
And it was a mouse game.
Mm-hmm.
For that as well. So, yeah, you can, on the Switch 2, use the Joy-Cons as a mouse and play it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I assume on the regular Switch, you just plug in a mouse
mm-hmm.
for that. I'm not 100% sure what kind of game this is.
It's a puzzle platformer.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, you're, like, playing this little, like, fairy dude who's, like... And that's basically what the mouse controls. Basically, Wario, like, keeps, like, throwing, like, a bunch of various objects on top of Mario's head to blind him, like a bucket or whatever, and you're... Which basically renders him blind, and so you're sort of using the fairy to try and change the environment around so he can move to the levels in without getting hurt.
Yeah.
That's basically the game. I'm also pretty sure this was like the only second time that Wario showed up in a game.
Maybe. Oh yeah, this is a Game Freak game too.
Yeah, it was Satoshi Tajiri did this one. Yeah, this is an early Game Freak joint.
So yeah, that's let me see what Wario's games were in order. Let's see.
I know the first game that he showed up in was in Super Mario Land 2, the 6 golden coins, where he was the villain.
Let's see. Yeah, they have basically the ones he's the star of. There's Super Mario Land 3.
Yep.
There's Wario Land. There's Virtual Boy Wario Land.
Yep.
Wario Land 2.
Yep.
Wario Land 3. Wario Land. Oh, these are the mainline ones. Okay.
Yeah, these are the mainline ones.
Let me see all the extra games. Okay, 93. This would be... Okay, this is before Super Mario Land 3.
Yeah.
So I guess that would be probably his second game.
Yeah, it's his second game, like I said. Yeah, like I said, the first game he appeared in was Super Mario Land 2, 6 Golden Coins. He was the villain.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Weirdly enough, Pokemon and Wario actually have like a direct connection.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. That sounds neat. But yeah, that's your trio for the Super Nintendo app, and seems pretty decent.
Yeah, it's one of those games people have like been wanting to play for a long time. It's one of those like a. It's one of those handful of Nintendo originals that like never, you know, cross the pond, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would probably be the main thing that I'd want to get my hands on. Typically when these kinds of games come out, I really just download them for the plane and go from there. And yeah, I'll probably try this out for a little bit, but you know, I have other stuff to play. Release bunch is for me. It is cool to see Bubsy, though. You know, we actually just put out a preview for a Bubsy 4D that Kayla did for us. It's a Steam demo right now that you can try out. And I also played a demo at PAX, and it's quite good. So, you know, I don't know if this Bubsy game is, like, known for anything, because I'm not a Bubsy fan. But it is pretty cool that, you know, Nintendo is... or, you know, whoever's working with Nintendo is putting these out, because it does look like full 4D will be a winner next year, so.
Mm.
Yeah. So there's that. But yeah, let's see. We got a release date finally for Power Wash Simulator 2. As I mentioned, they seem to be waiting to get into gold for all their platforms for announcing, and they did, and announced a launch date for October 23rd. Which will be about a week and a half away. It'll be on everything, PS5, Xbox, Switch 2, PC, which is Steam, Epic, and Microsoft Store for $24.99. I believe they're also going to have, I think for everything but the Switch 2, a 15% off discount for people that own the original game. For the platform, so if you have the PlayStation version of 1, you can get it for a discount on PS5, same for Xbox and PC.
Mm-hmm.
For that, so that's a nice little extra bonus there. And yeah, I was seeing a little more, I did another stream sort of showing off a little more of the game. It still looks really nice. So I am excited for this, and hope to be doing a review for it, so. Yeah, there's another Game of the Year contender there coming out here pretty soon for a very busy month of October. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Yeah, and it'll also be on Game Pass as well. So if you have that, you can check it out there. But, yeah, looking forward to that. Let's see. We got another game that got a date, one that people have been waiting on for a while, Skate Story. From Devolver and... what's the other developer on this game? Yeah, let me see here. Sam Eng, for that. This is a trippy looking skateboarding game. You're kind of almost like a skateboarder that is kind of crystalline almost, with a very kind of surreal visuals. And they announced that it'll be out December 8th on a PS5, Switch 2, and PC. So that's not too far off, about 2 months from now. Yeah, this looks really neat. And yeah, you're skating in an abstract take on hell. By eating the moon, the devil will give your soul back. Based on the trailer, the path of the moon is paved with a lot of curbs and rails to grind on. So, over 70 tricks to learn, to unlock new boards, wheels, gear, and more. Has a soundtrack from the band Blood Cultures.
Yep.
Which features the sort of music you would expect for this visual style. So, great. There's a Steam demo out now, so that's one you can check out and sort of get an idea of what to expect. And yeah, it just looks like a really wild skateboarding game. So yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. All right. Looks cool.
Yeah. And as always happens, whenever we talk about upcoming releases, one of them has to get delayed immediately.
Yep.
And this time it was Mina the Hollower.
Fuck.
Yeah, sorry, Brandon. Just real quick about Skate Story. Whenever we see that game, it looks even more awesome. So I'm really hoping that one pans out, but I'm also hoping that the December release date doesn't kill it. But yeah, Mina the Hollower is also a really disappointing delay. Obviously, like a lot of us were looking forward to it. I have been on media blackout for it. Like, I know there's a demo, but I haven't touched it. There have been some people that told me that Pipistrello was still better, but I'm like, hey man, we don't know yet. But yeah, we'll see. I also have a Fantasy Critic, so I'm hoping it still lands 2025.
Yeah.
I mean, they themselves said it wasn't really that big it says indefinitely, but they themselves said it wasn't really that big of a delay. So,
well, yeah, but also if they delay it to January 1st, that wouldn't be that big of a delay either. But it would also like,
I mean, it would still be holiday, so
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Basically, they said this week our team has made a tough decision. We decided to delay Mina the Hollower. The entire crew has been working tirelessly day and night to finish development for release on October 31st. But we're just not quite there yet. This isn't a major delay, it's just a stretch of time to apply some final polish and balancing to make the game truly shine. They're saying that we don't want to announce another date until it's submitted to platforms. So please hang tight as we reach the finish line. The game is so close to being done. Playing from start to finish every day.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't think it's going to be that much of a delay here. It seems like they are delaying it for good reasons to kind of make sure they get to where they want it to be and not have to be putting out in a state where they're like, oh, we'll fix it kind of stuff. I'm sure there'll still be some minor things. But yeah, the thing with the demo is if you did not grab it when it was available, it's no longer available. There's a short time limited demo. But yeah, add that to the list of games that we were looking forward to that are not going to be available, at least for a bit. Maybe it'll be out by the end of the year, which might be a good place for it. Because yeah, that last few days of the month has a ton of games there.
Yeah.
Not really too big of a surprise. So yeah, there you go for that one. Let's see. Yeah, we have this one, the developer of Pico Park, they have three games on Steam. They have Pico Park Classic Edition, Pico Park and Pico Park 2. These are sort of co-op platformers, where you can play generally with anywhere from 2 to like 10 people, depending on the game. The developer for this was looking to do, I think, a free week or something before they put out a big update for the first time in a while for the Classic Edition. Apparently didn't realize what they were doing and made it free permanently, because I guess it doesn't allow you to make something free for bits and then change the price. I think you would have to apply for like what developers usually do, like a free weekend kind of thing. Apparently they didn't do that and know that there was a different way to do that. So they ended up making it free permanently and said like, well, that's our mistake. And here, I'm thinking of updating Classic Edition for the first time in 9 years. Since I'm doing it anyway, I'll update it with online support. I might charge a small fee for it. I recommend installing it while it's still free. They put out the update September 13th. The game now had art that matched its two sequels, ran on monitors over 60 hertz, added Steam input support, and now included online multiplayer, saying it will keep it free for about a week. And then it's last week and a new update appeared. The title is Pico Park Classic Edition is permanently free, exclamation point, with the text saying, I was planning to switch to a paid plan after updating the online support, but I forgot that once you switch from paid to free, I can never go back to paid.
Nope.
And so, I mean, like, if you enjoy this free version, be sure to try the series, Pico Park 1 and 2. So, yeah, you can check that out on Steam. And if you like it, grab the sequels with the developer for their little mistake here for that. So I'm surprised that Steam doesn't make that more clear when you're trying to do like a promotional free period versus making it permanently free. It also seems like it should probably not be so easy to make a game free and then not have the caveat that you can never charge for it again, which also seems weird. So yeah, there you go. One little Steam thing you can do. But yeah, let's see what else we got here. Clair Obscur Expedition 33 announced that they had reached 5 million copies sold, which is great news for that game. They also have a new update that they are working on that will, let me see, they'll add new features, most significant of which is a brand new environment. They'll new enemies and other surprises. Fans can also expect new boss battles designed to challenge late game players. They'll also introduce quality of life features such as new text and UI localizations in Czech, Ukrainian, Latin American, Spanish, Turkish, Vietnamese, Thai, Indonesian. There'll be other surprises in the update. So that's cool. Nice to see this game doing so well and adding more free content to the game to celebrate that. So, yeah.
Yeah. Apparently they were already like intending on adding stuff to it. They were just, you know, waiting for the sales numbers to come out, and it ended up being far more popular than they thought it was going to be. So yeah, it's good. I'm glad that game is getting the success it deserves.
Yeah. So yeah, there's that. We got the next bit of news here. In the wake of the big Microsoft layoffs, a bunch of people were laid off at the, I think, Bethesda Online Studio. I forget what the title of that studio is. ZeniMax Online Studios that worked on Elder Scrolls Online for the past, you know, 10 years or whatever it's been at this point. Including, I think, one of the main directors on the game resigned as part of the layoffs. And we found out now that they have formed their own studio, a new studio called Sackbird Studios, to work on an original project for consoles and PC, where they'll talk about that when it's ready. So I assume it'll probably be some online-focused kind of thing. Yeah, it seems the studio right now is currently under 10 people, so that is a small project for the time being. Yeah, they say here, after years in AAA, we wanted the freedom to take smart risks without waiting for a green light or chasing quarterly targets. We're fully employee owned and funded, which means we only answer to people who are passionate about games. Lee Ridout added here, we're grateful for a time at ZeniMax Online Studios. It shaped us as developers and as people. When I learned that Blackbird was being canceled and a lot of the people were losing their jobs, it lit a fire. We realized the best way to protect our craft and our team was to create a studio that where creative independence isn't negotiable. So yeah, we wish them all the best in that. And yeah, it'll be probably at least a few years before we see anything out of this. So there you go. Some good news.
Yeah.
Yep, it's definitely good news. Obviously, you want to wish them all the best. You don't know what can happen, even when you're funded. So, yeah, hopefully they're able to find a new audience for what they're creating, and hopefully it's good.
Yeah. If you have anything to add, Brandon?
Nope. Absolutely good news.
Yeah, we got some slightly bad news here. Unity discovered a major security vulnerability in development, like in their 2017 version of the tool. So games made on that version here have this major issue where, let's see, if an application was built with a version of Unity Editor that had the vulnerability or the vulnerable Unity runtime code, then an adversary may be able to execute code on and exfiltrate confidential information from a machine on which the application is running, which sounds bad. This affects the Android, Windows, Linux, and Mac OS operating systems. It sounds bad, but there is no evidence of any exploitation of this vulnerability, nor has there been any impact on users or customers. Particularly because it requires them to have access directly to that computer before the, outside of the vulnerability. So most likely they would have to gain access to your computer through, like, being in your physical room, which most likely most people will not have an issue with. But as a, to address it, Unity has released an update for each of the major and minor versions of the Unity Editor, starting with Unity 2019.1. And it has also released a binary patcher to patch already built applications dating back to 2017.1. And so, like, Steam seems to have made this pretty easy, because I've been seeing a bunch of updates in a variety of games on Steam, where if I check the change log on them, it'll say, you know, updating the Unity version to this new version. So it seems to not be too tough of a solution here for this. So luckily this should not be a major issue, but is one to at least keep an eye on. So yeah, it does not affect consoles anyway, so you're all fine there. But yeah, something to keep an eye on and just kind of make sure to make sure you get all those games updated for that. So yeah, there you go. Let's see here. We got an Ubisoft update.
Yeah.
Seems like they were working on a new Assassin's Creed game as of last summer that was set during the post-Civil War Reconstruction era in the U.S., where basically you would be a formerly enslaved black man who would be recruited by the assassins and would return to the South to fight for justice for those people, including fighting the founders of the Ku Klux Klan. But now that we found out that the game was canceled last July, as Ubisoft was essentially reacting to the a lot of the controversy that was starting to swirl around Assassin's Creed Shadows. And the general things that were going on in the U.S. here as Trump's campaign was continuing on and all that. And maybe smartly decided against continuing development on this, but I also think it really would have been a fun thing to see come out and see if this game will get the attention of the Trump administration, because they are not too busy to react to the dumbest culture war shit possible, as they have demonstrated over and over again.
Especially with Ghost of Yote, because apparently that game is selling really, really well, and they're not really taking it very well.
Yeah, at least the culture warriors. I don't know if the Trump administration has had any comment on that, but yeah.
No.
People have been, like I saw one thing was probably used AI to generate a more favorable version of Atsu, and it's like people were clowning on them over and over again.
Yeah.
Some real great jokes of, like, I think took the Doom guy and gave him a assless chaps kind of thing. This is what gamers really want. And it's like, yeah, that's pretty good shit. Spider-Man with cake and a nut bulge on his suit.
Mm-hmm.
So fun stuff. But yeah, this is a shame that Ubisoft canceled this game.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been fun to see reactions to it.
Yeah.
Considering, you know, they've already made a game set in the U.S. and they've already made a game, you know, set around this time frame.
Mm-hmm.
As the Syndicate was in the late 1800s.
Yep.
In the UK.
Yep.
So yeah, it's not like this is too soon or too recent of an event that they could
mm-hmm.
cover. But yeah, there you go. For that, I don't know if you have anything to add, Brandon.
Nope. Other than the fact that, you know, they could have made gold with that one and they decided to just let it drop off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have loved to, you know, climb the highest tower and then destroy a racist. You know, that would have been great. But yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go for that news.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, our next industry news here. Heart Machine has announced that they are laying off some more people. They did some mm-hmm. late last year in 2024 and are apparently doing more this year, as I think Hyperlight Breaker has not sold very well in early mm-hmm. access on Steam. So they basically posted a message saying, as we wrap up our work on Hyperlight Breaker, we had to make the difficult decision to part ways with a number of talented team members. It was not our ideal path, but rather the only one available given the circumstances. I say this news reflects broader forces beyond our control, including shifts in funding, corporate consolidation, and the uncertain environment many small studios like us are navigating today.
Yeah.
So they're going to basically polish up and kind of finish up whatever they can for Hyperlight Breaker by January.
Mm-hmm.
I say we still have something coming in January and deliver something meaningful and as polished and complete as we can give our current circumstances. We're doing our best to refine what we can, complete key systems, and have the game culminate in a satisfying punctuation point. But yeah, that seems like they're going to finish up development and not, you know, do any of the other stuff they were planning for that, which will be a shame. Especially because people had high hopes for that game. But it seems like it just did not come together as well as people would have liked to consider buying it in early access and kind of help support the studio and keep it going.
Yeah.
It also means probably won't be coming to consoles,
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately. But they do still have one more game that's coming out, Possessors.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be on November 11th. With Devolver Digital, I think, is the one publishing that.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that does well, but if not, the studio may not survive for too much longer. We'll see. But yeah, that would be a shame, because it's definitely one of the cooler studios out there with the work that they've done over the years, making a lot of really interesting and fun games. So yeah.
Yeah, it's obviously never fun to report on a layoff, especially one to an indie. Because, you know, a lot of people are saying, oh, indies are the way to go. No, they're actually a whole lot harder, especially mm-hmm. if they're only and they're trying to find, you know, trying to find their market that way. And, you know, they had a huge hit with Hyperlight Drifter. But Hyperlight Breaker is obviously, like, not getting it to where they want to be. I've played demos on various occasions, and you know, and I just found them just fine. And unfortunately, like, just fine is not going to cut it in this industry, especially as an indie. It's like, you know, once you make like one failure, it's hard to recoup and try to convince, you know, the people with the money to continue to invest in you. And that's just the way the industry is right now, and it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. So there you go for that one. We do have this bit of news. It seems like a bunch of current and former Little Rocket Boy union devs that are part of the IWGB union.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's International Workers in Great Britain. Or was it Independent Workers of Great Britain? Union, signed this this letter, an open letter to the executive leadership at Build a Rocket Boy. Saying, yeah, employees and ex-employees at Build a Rocket Boy, together with game workers, branch of the Independent Workers of Great Britain, writing to address the long-standing disrespect and mistreatment of your staff. For years, you have expected them to adapt to your every whim, with those in disagreement being shut down or cast aside. We estimate a UK majority of 250 to 300 workers across the company have now lost their livelihoods. These layoffs happen because you repeatedly refuse to listen to your workforce's years of experience, resulting in one of the worst video game launches this decade. They list off the few of the many issues they've faced under their management. Lack of transparency and communication, unbearable levels of overtime. Saying here, in the 4 months leading up to the launch of Mind's Eye, you implemented a mandatory 8 hours of overtime per week for every single employee. Time off in lieu was given at a rate of 7 hours back for every 8 hours worked, but many still have not been able to take this time off due to your continued request for extra high priority work even after launch. Let's see, they also cover disastrous handling redundancies, saying we believe you have consistently mishandled the redundancy process, causing confusion and distress for all staff. Employees have received misinformation, been handed dismissal notices with the wrong notice periods, been put in the wrong team so that their performances were scored by the wrong people. These and other errors have potentially resulted in the wrongful dismissal of dozens of staff members. These and many other issues, some of which have been made public already, have caused pain and stress for your employees. Our experience at the company has been one of burnout, job insecurity, health issues, and the failure of a game that many of us have put years of our lives into. Build a Rocket Boy needs to change. CEOs need to take a backseat and allow the skilled people who remain at the company to forge the path ahead, and have a list of demands there to go with that. And yeah. It seems like a spokesperson for Build a Rocket Boy has responded with a statement saying, every one of our former team members poured passion, creativity, and hard work into our games and our studio. Parting ways with people is never easy, and we were deeply saddened to make that decision. We didn't anticipate having to make redundancies after launch, but we approached the process with care and transparency, meeting all our obligations. We're listening closely to feedback from former employees and are committed to learning and growing from it. Where the part saying meeting all our obligations meant we did everything as the law claimed we need to do, and that's all we care to do, kind of thing. But yeah, not great to way for people to be handled, especially in the wake of the game that I imagine many of them expected to not come out as a good product. And yeah, being forced to do lots of overtime before and after launch without much compensation is a rough thing to see, and these people all deserved more respect than they seem to have gotten.
It's really a messy situation. I don't know what any of this solves, because a lot of these decisions were made already. And, like, you know, I'm not going to, like, take the side of the publisher, but at some point you have to, you know, realize when to cut the loss. You know, nobody purposely works on a game for it to be bad. It just happens with, you know, whether it's bad leadership, whether it's just, you know, a stressed out situation, which I'm sure all of this is. But at the end of the day, it's like, I don't know if there's anything worth saving here, and it's just tough to say. So
I'm not all that familiar with the laws around the stuff in the UK, but this may end up having to lead to financial penalties and whatnot, so we'll have to see anything comes out of this, but yeah, want to see where that goes. But yeah, there's that, and then we'll end on the downer note here. The Outsiders, the developers of Metal Hellsinger, announced that their studio is shutting down. They mentioned here, let's see, it is always tough, and right now we're all hurting. As they put out a big statement here saying, I have not had much time to process the news, but all of us at the Outsiders and Funcom Stockholm have been affected by the layoffs at Funcom, and our 10-year-old studio will be closing. Many of us had survived a near-death studio experience years back when Darkborn was canceled. Because of this team's loyalty and refusal to quit, Metal Hell Singer was born. It will always be a high point for me personally, and I will be forever grateful. We got to make it for the wonderful team and partnerships that made it happen. We had hoped to do something even better this time. Things don't always go the way they hope. We're not giving up, and we are going to try to continue on in some new form. I think you can help in any way with business leads, placement for employees, guidance, whatever it is. I would be generally grateful if you reach out here. That's a shame. That game is pretty cool. But yeah, Funcom has been going through layoffs for a while now. And they ended up being a studio that survived one and managed to make a pretty cool game that did not seem to do super well to continue mandate their existence. And that's a shame.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Because I really liked Metal Hell Singer. It was one of my games of that year when it came out. And sucks, man.
Yeah. Do you remember how much Metal Hell Singer launched at? I know it was a Game Pass game, but I don't know what the...
I have no idea.
Yeah. But you know, Funcom, they're not an indie anymore. I believe so. That makes it even tougher because obviously, Chinese companies want to see that green as well. So that's unfortunate. But yeah, that's the thing. We obviously want to praise studios for having awesome ideas, like a Metal Hell Singer. You know, unfortunately, I didn't play that game, but I definitely thought that the idea was definitely dope. And, you know, I love seeing that kind of innovation. But at the same time, you want to understand who your audience is. And if you're trying to create a new audience, you better hope that you're able to do that. Because, again, it's tough. Games are expensive. And that was the reason why I asked, because I don't know who they were trying to sell to. And, you know, obviously, guys like us who, you know, we'll pretty much get everything as long as it's cool and we have the money to do it. But I saw a recent study that most gamers buy 2 to 3 games a year. And I'm pretty sure those 2 to 3 games are not going to be a meta. They'll get something that they know. And usually it's going to be a franchise that is, you know, super wildly popular. It's probably going to be Battlefield. It's probably going to be Madden. One of those things. And yeah, you want to try to, I get that not everything can be a Hollow Knight, but that's just, you know, the rough reality, as we've been saying with every piece of bad news we see.
Seems like it was, let's say here, $29.99.
Gotcha. Yeah, I don't know if they were owned by Tencent yet when that game came out, but $30 for an indie is still kind of tough.
Yeah, this says, they were acquired by Funcom in 2021, and Funcom was acquired by Tencent in 2020.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Kind of multiple layers of corporate ownership. Not always great, please.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there you go for that. Yeah, we wish all those people well. Maybe some of them will stick together and form a new studio. We'll see. But yeah, at least in Sweden, they got some pretty good social safety nets, so they'll be okay for the time being.
Yeah.
But yeah, there you go. We'll end the show there on a bummer, as 2025 has often done. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in, and thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news. And if you have a show, feel free to recommend it to friends and family and select strangers that are also tired of developers being shut down and laid off and all that. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. I'm going to see what is coming out this week here. Let's see. We got Chicken Hair and the Treasure of Spiking Beard, NASCAR 25, Ball Pit, Pokemon Legends ZA, Keeper, Lumo 2. So yeah, some notable games there. New stuff from Nintendo and Microsoft, at the least. Mm-hmm. And Devolver. So yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. I hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye. Later.